Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It is spring there for sure. The frogs are talking to us at night, and on Wednesday, the first mosquito was heard, not seen, but heard. Clarence Bunsen felt he needed to open a window. The bedroom was so stuffy, so he did. And a moment later, he heard that familiar sound. People are cutting brush. And since it's illegal now to burn it, people have had to find a way around the law. Law enforcement in Lake Wobegon, they pretty much take a wait-and-see attitude and not look too hard. People are not supposed to burn brush because it's considered air pollution, but you have all this brush sitting around in the bushes and you push it to the edge of your yard. And so they noticed that, of course, the kids at the high school had a homecoming bonfire, and the Lutheran kids always had a bonfire in the fall, and so people would gather together to burn brush, and they called it May Day, and they figured as long as they sang, it would be legal. So they would burn it and stand around the bonfire and sing America the Beautiful, and I've been working on the railroad, and just let it go at that. Spring cleaning has begun, and you see big shopping bags full of junk down at the ends of the driveways. People are clearing out, especially those homes that are under the control of crusaders who are out to eliminate waste and corruption. A sort of perpetual congressional investigation going on in the basements of some homes. But inertia is a strong force, and you see valuable things when you look in your basement. And yes, these paint cans do appear to date back to the Roosevelt administration, but there may be projects lying ahead that could be useful. And you could get something for them on eBay. You never know. Best to let them sit for another year. People have raked away the dead leaves and the debris from their yards, and there is now movement toward gardening. Mr. Fred Peterson does the plowing in town, plows people's gardens, big lots, big long gardens that go from about 15 feet one side of the house, all the way down to the garage, all the way to the alley. He's always done this with his 1948 Farmall Cub tractor, kept in perfect condition. But this year, he broke his ankle. People are not exactly sure how he did this. 80 years old, and he stepped in the wrong place, and he broke his ankle. And he's had to be put in the Good Shepherd nursing home until he recovers. So his son, Fred Jr., has been doing the plowing for him. Though Fred is in the real estate business, knows nothing about these people whose yards he's plowing. And it's complicated. The old man lies there in bed in the nursing home worrying about whose garden is getting plowed. And it's a complicated, complicated system. Some of these he doesn't charge for, you see. Some of these gardens he's been doing as a favor now for 30, 40 years. He's just done it because he knew their family, so he doesn't charge them money. Some are people he might charge $50, $75. Miss Markland asked him to plow up her garden last spring, and she asked him how much, and he was so perplexed. He said, well, I'll think about it. So he plowed her garden, and then he turned off the tractor, and he stood by it. And they talked a little about the weather, and they talked about summer vacation plans, and they talked about the health of their various loved ones and children and grandchildren. And she said, how much do I owe you? After they had had a conversation for 15 minutes, then it was polite to bring up the subject of money. Well, he said, it only took me 10 minutes, so I think $10 ought to do it. So she pulled out a 10 and she paid him. So it's $10 for her, but it's nothing for a lot of other people. And the other people do it in trade, a chocolate cake maybe, or a case of beer. Or in the case of Merlette from the Bon Marché Beauty Salon, there's a haircut involved. It's a complicated system. And his son doesn't know how this works. And he hates to think of his son charging people money who've never been charged money before. He lies in bed with his broken ankle, thinking about just getting up and walking on it, because it's just so complicated. He thinks of how much information he will take with him when he leaves this world. Culture is complicated. It's made up of a lot of little complicated deals that are made over a long period of time. And the man who's 80 is carrying a lot around in the haymow. The world is going to be bereft when he leaves. He hates to think about it. He is resolved to keep on going. He's getting the crutches out. He's trying to learn how to walk on them. The other day, a group of third graders came up to the Good Shepherd home from the school. They sort of do the dress rehearsal of their spring concert for the old timers. They came and they stood in the hall, and he was wheeled out in a wheelchair and all of the others to listen to kids playing recorders and xylophones. They did a tune that after a while you could sort of recognize was I Got Rhythm or something of the sort. And they did God Bless America, and they did Beethoven's Ode to Joy. And when he heard the Ode to Joy, he suddenly realized that he was in the Good Shepherd home, listening to kids come and play music, which he had always associated with elderly people, you see. So when he heard the Ode to Joy, now he started to think maybe he wouldn't make it. And he burst into tears. And they saw him weeping, and they thought that he was moved. So they played an encore. The class play has been canceled, the senior class play up at the high school. This was the news this week, although not so many people were talking about it. It just was canceled. The cast of the play had lost interest after 3 weeks of rehearsal. It was a play called Living in the Basement, and it was a drama about a family, a rural family, that is fighting depression. It was kind of an issue play. And all of these kids, well, some of them, and then more of them, had really wanted to do West Side Story. And Mrs. Swenson said, you know, you that's a good idea, but you get 3 weeks into rehearsal and you'd realize how difficult it is to do the dancing for West Side Story. I just don't think it would work. So she talked him into doing Living in the Basement, this drama, which is about a lot of people in a family who can't communicate with each other. So there is a series of interior monologues that the audience sees but other characters do not, in which people sort of deliver their life story and their story of shame and pain that they're unable to share with their loved ones. And that's pretty much the first act. And then in the second act, a stranger comes, and one of them starts to tell her story to the stranger, and someone else in the family overhears her and says, you never told us that. And pretty soon they're all talking to each other, and all of the secrets are out on the table, and they're weeping and sobbing and putting their arms around each other. And the stranger disappears, who, as turns out, was an angel, of course, and so now they're facing the future, and now they're resolved to communicate better in the future. The cast really just hated this drama the more they got into it. And they asked Mrs. Swenson if, as a warm-up before each rehearsal, they could just do, when you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet and the spit hits the fan, you got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're always connected. Bum, 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 bum. They, well, okay, she said, fine. And then they would do the dialogue, which was sort of spare. Why don't you ever talk to me? What do you think I'm doing now? You never tell me anything. What do you want me to tell you? On it went like this. They wanted to do West Side Story in the worst way. They just lost interest in living in the basement as time went on. And I can understand how they felt, because I went to see West Side Story, the movie, back in 1961 when I was in college, and it was just amazing. I was in love with Natalie Wood. She was troubled in a way that made you want to comfort her. She had made a beautiful movie with Warren Beatty called Splendor in the Grass, in which she was actually mentally ill, Natalie Wood was. And she was mentally ill in a way that made you want to be mentally ill as well. She had that kind of dark, neurotic beauty to her that we immediately associated with New York and New York women. We loved her in West Side Story. All of the Lutherans I knew sat and watched that over and over and over and over again. Guys in jeans, black T-shirts, dancing down streets of tenements with knives stuck in their shoes, cigarettes up in the sleeve of the T-shirt. Oh, that was right up our alley. We loved that. Until I saw West Side Story, my favorite musical had been Music Man, and, you know. There were bells on the hill, but I never heard them ringing, never heard them at all, till there was you. But then I saw Natalie Wood and Richard Boehmer singing Somewhere, and you knew that he was going to die when he was in her arms, and they sung, "There's a place for us, a time and place for us. Hold my hand, and I'll take you there. Hold my hand, and we're halfway there. Somehow, someday, somewhere." What a beautiful, you knew he was going to die. And yet, to be able to sing that song with Natalie, you would die willingly. Natalie never could have been Marion the librarian. She never would have hung around River City, even though they had a pool table, which began with P, which rhymes with T, which stood for trouble. She was trouble. She would have gone elsewhere to any town she could find. She wouldn't have waited for her Music Man. She would have gone to New York, where she could find Tony and sing Somehow, Someday, Somewhere, and then die, which was the right thing, of course. Many years later, when I came to New York and I bought an apartment on the West Side, all of the Marias that I met had moved with their Tonys up to the Berkshires. They had gone up to Lenox and Great Barrington. They had left the West Side behind, and they were no longer interested in Somehow, Someday, Somewhere. They were looking for, one, bells on the hill, number two, birds in the sky, and gardens with roses and dew. They weren't interested, but we were. And I could understand those kids in the high school wanted to do West Side Story. They wanted to meet with Mrs. Swenson and talk about their feelings about the play Living in the Basement and how they felt about her being so controlling. Controlling, she said, "I'm a director, that's what we do." And how embarrassed they would be to have their friends see them in that last scene where they're weeping and hugging and promising to communicate. They would be the talk of the town. They'd be humiliated, and they would go through the rest of their lives knowing that never again would they have a chance to do West Side Story and sing, "When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette." They would never, ever get to do that. "Well, okay," she said, "we'll take a vote." And they voted 10-4 not to do the senior class play, which went against everything they'd been brought up with. Never to quit. Never to quit. Never, ever give up. And they found out then, the reason you should never quit or give up is because when you do, it won't make that big a difference to people. They won't notice. You think it's going to be a scandal, and it's not. You'll come home early from school for 3 or 4 days before your parents say, "Weren't you in a play?" And you say, well, it was canceled. It was canceled. And they'll say, "Oh,
That's all. That's all the world says when you quit, when you give it up. Oh, that's all you get. So you want to stay in it. Stay in it. And it's not the worst thing to come into your extremely late middle years, as I have, and never having had a chance to do West Side Story. It keeps hope alive. The thought that someday, somehow, somewhere, you might still get to do it. It's one of those dreams that you keep alive. Hope never dies. Hope never dies. I'm long past the age when I've played baseball, and yet it still is alive for me, and I can see it somehow in my mind. It's a sharp grounder hit to the shortstop. I'm playing second. I run towards second base. I catch the flip from the shortstop. I pivot. I throw to first. As I leap, my legs tucked under me to avoid the slide of the base runner. He comes in under. I catch the base runner going to first by 15 feet. It's a double play, and we trot back to the dugout. The shortstop and I, we don't high-five each other. We're pros. We're cool. We've done a double play many, many times before. Do you see what I'm getting at? I haven't done it yet, but somehow, someday, somewhere. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.